We are in the book of Exodus, chapter number 4, ready for verse number 10. This is the commissioning of Moses by God at Mount Sinai through the agency of the burning bush. Moses, as we've said multiple times, has already moved on. He wasn't really interested in taking on this job. And so he's been trying to make excuses to God as to why it's not going to work. A very common procedure for people that don't really want to do something. They make excuses. So he has so far made the excuse, well, what name am I supposed to give them? And so he gave him the divine name for the very first time, He Who Is. Then Moses suggests, well, you know what? They're not even going to believe me. They're going to think I'm lying to them. And so God says, I'll give you some miracles. You can throw your stick down and it'll become a snake. That'll scare them into believing, won't it? Or how about this one? Have them all stick their hands in their cloaks, and when they pull them out, they'll be leprous as snow. And understand, of course, Moses was shown each of these supernatural signs himself by God. Oh, and then once they're shocked that they have leprosy, have them put their hands back in and pull them back out, and they'll be fine. That should convince them, don't you think? Because the first people that have to be convinced are the leaders of the Israelites that Moses is there for God. Last thing that we saw was that if these leaders won't believe the snake or the leprosy miracles, that Moses is to take some water and turn it into blood right in front of them. And that should tip them over the edge. And I mentioned as I was closing that ends up being the very first of the 10 plagues whenever all of this happens in front of Pharaoh. So God's supernatural power is now embodied in Moses. But he still doesn't want the job. Verse number 10, next excuse. But Moses said to He Who Is, oh, my Lord, which I believe is Adonai at this point, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you've spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and of tongue. Now, there's a lot of debate, I think, in the commentaries about exactly what Moses means by this. Because in other passages, it talks about how Moses is powerful in word and deed. So what does he mean when he says, I'm not eloquent, I'm slow of speech, and of tongue? And I think the best explanation, which many have signed on to, is the idea that while he was perfectly capable of speaking and making sense, he had some sort of speech impediment, either a stutter or a lisp or some other artifact of speech that made him uncomfortable. And there are many of us who have had to overcome such speech impediments. My big problem when I was a little kid was lisping really bad. I still try to stay away from multiple S's in a row because it doesn't go well. And maybe a little bit of hesitance of speech, and some of you might catch that from time to time where I have to pause in order to make sure I don't start doing the and, you know, repeating sounds at the beginnings of words. That can be overcome. That can be dealt with. I know preachers that were really bad with speech impediments when they were younger that God helped him overcome. And so Moses seems to be objecting that I've got a problem that's not going to make me sound like your spokesperson. And God's response is, it is exactly what you'd expect. He who is said to him, who's made man's mouth? You know, who's the creator here? And who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Now, this gets into that idea from the book of Job that we talked about, that most people assumed that God had control of everything. So if a person couldn't speak or couldn't hear, couldn't see, couldn't walk, God must have done that. Now, we have a more precise understanding that God in his sovereignty has the ability to allow those things to happen. And permissive will, as we would say. And the same impact in the argument is going to happen here no matter what. And that is, hey, Moses, I'm God. Don't you think I can help with a little speech issue? Is it not I, he who is? Now, therefore, go. I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak. So God says, you're just the spokesperson. You don't have to even think about what you're going to say because I'm going to provide that, which is interesting because that gets echoed in the New Testament. When Jesus tells his apostles that they will be inspired by the Holy Spirit, that they will not need to worry about exactly how to phrase the things that they were going to speak about, the gospel in front of people that might make them nervous, like kings and governors, that the Holy Spirit was going to provide for them what needed to be said at the appropriate time. So we're talking about inspiration here for Moses. He doesn't need to worry about any speech impediment. God will overcome that. And he is going to provide the content as well. Doesn't matter to Moses. Finally, we get to his heart in this. He said, oh, my Lord, Adonai, please just send someone else. And this is the verse by which I have great confidence when I've been teaching that after 40 years, Moses was done with the idea of being a redeemer for the Israelis. He'd moved on. And even when he's offered it from God himself, the chance to do this again, he doesn't want to do it. In many instances, I would say God is not going to force you to do anything you don't want to do. I think that is the general principle. That is the general rule. You'll sometimes hear me say, God does not twist your arm up behind your back and make you do anything. This is an exception to that. Apparently, Moses is the right man for the job. And God is not going to allow him to wriggle out of it. This is not optional. This is mandatory. And Moses will do well. He is the right man for the job. I mean, who else do you know of that could have put up with all the things he put up with for the next 40 years in the wilderness and still come out the other side sane? So God basically tells him, knock it off, you're going to do it. Verse 14, then the anger of he who is was kindled against Moses, and he said. And so now he takes away this most recent excuse of not being able to be a good spokesperson and gives a bridge solution to it. Is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. So Aaron has no problem speaking. Behold, he is coming out to meet you. So God already knew this was going to happen. Remember, God is omniscient. He is all-knowing. He is, was, is, will always be. He knows the end from the beginning. So he already knows that this conversation with Moses was going to go this direction. So God had already, days before, spoken with Aaron and said, Aaron, you need to head toward Midian and meet your brother Moses. I have a mission for him, and you're going to help. So we're never told about that meeting between God and Aaron. We just know it happened. So is there not Aaron, your brother the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. So he's going to be excited because they haven't seen each other in 40 years. The last time that they saw each other, Aaron was 43 and Moses was 40. And now 40 years have passed. So verse 15, you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you both what to do. So they're going to have a team approach in everything we describe from here on out. Sometimes I'll remind you of it, but most of the time you just need to imagine it. God will reveal something to Moses, you know, either speak to him face to face in the cloud or in a dream or whatever he uses, or perhaps just into his head, just speaks into his brain. And then Moses will turn around and speak quietly to Aaron, and then Aaron is going to boom out the word of the Lord. So Aaron's voice is going to be the one that the elders of Israel will hear. Moses will be there, but he's going to be the more quiet of the two. And the same thing's going to happen whenever they go before Pharaoh. Moses will clearly be the driving force of the partnership, but it's Aaron's voice that will be broadcasting the information. That was the compromise that God made with Moses. Verse 16, shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. Meaning, you will tell him what needs to be passed on. And take in your hand this staff with which you shall do the signs. So don't forget that this staff that you've been using as your shepherd's staff is now going to become the rod of power. And this rod will apparently be shared back and forth between Moses and Aaron. Verse number 18. Moses went back to Jethro, his father-in-law. So all this happened away from the place where Moses lives with his wife, Birdie, Zipporah, and his children and his father-in-law. He's been out on a shepherding tour, and now that shepherding tour has come to an end. And so it's probably not terribly far away from where he normally lives. So he and the sheep come home, and no doubt his father-in-law is like, well, why are you back so soon? What's going on? So Moses said to him, please, let me go back to my brothers in Egypt and see whether they are still alive. And so Jethro said to Moses, you go in peace. Now, it doesn't say in the text here, but I wonder if perhaps Moses shared his experience on Mount Sinai with his father-in-law. Remember, his father-in-law is the priest of Midian, and I suspect he is priest of God Most High, much like Melchizedek before him. I think that he, of all the people in the region, would have been open to Moses' story of the burning bush and the commissioning of God to go back to Egypt. Now, some people wonder, well, why is he asking permission to do something God told him to do? Because it's polite, because it's appropriate according to their culture. Jethro is the head of the family. Moses is his son-in-law. And so if he wants to do anything, he has to ask for Jethro's permission. And not just that. As we will see in a moment, Moses is going to be taking his wife and children with him on this trip to Egypt. And then when they leave Egypt, the idea is they're going to go to Canaan and live. So he needs to ask permission, politely, to take his family away from Grandpa and Grandma, right? And so that's what he's doing. And Jethro's response was, "You go with peace. I give you my blessing." Verse 19, "He who is said to Moses in Midian, 'Go back to Egypt, for all the men who were seeking your life are dead.'" Now, we talked about how the chronology that I've structured indicates that Hatshepsut had died the year previous, and that she was more than likely the driving force wanting Moses dead for killing that pure-blood Egyptian taskmaster. But Hatshepsut is now gone, and the people in her sphere of control, they're gone as well, out of power. It's now Thutmose III who is in control, and he was no fan of Hatshepsut, apparently. The idea seems to be that she kind of kept him under control from taking the throne that actually belonged to him until he was in his 20s. And so he was resentful of that. They gather this from the idea that people from Thutmose III's regime defaced an awful lot of Hatshepsut's material after her death. Anyway, those guys are all dead. So Moses has no outstanding warrants, as we would say, when he goes to Egypt. But he does have a problem that has to be resolved. And this one involves us doing some in-between-the-lines thinking, okay? So verse 20. "So Moses took his wife and his sons." Now, we only knew about one son up to this point in the story. Now we know that he's got a couple. And had them ride on a donkey, and he went back to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the staff of God in his hand. So he's heading out, and it's like a little over a week journey to go across the northern portion of the Sinai Peninsula to Egypt. I think it might be 10 days, something of that nature. And he is going there to do God's will. So verse 21, "He who is said to Moses, 'When you go back to Egypt, see that you do before Pharaoh all the miracles that I've put in your power. But I'm going to harden his heart so that he will not let the people go.'" Now, this is something we'll talk about once we get to the 10 plagues. Pharaoh's heart started out being hardened by himself. But at some point, it flips over to God continuing to keep his heart hard. Because, and this will be the explanation, God wanted the full impact of these judgments against the gods and goddesses of Egypt to be displayed before the Israelis left. And so even though Thutmose III is going to weaken in his resolve a little bit partway through, God is going to go, nope, Buster, you're going to deal with the full force of my judgment. So just stand there and get ready for some more. And so the last plague is going to be mentioned here in verse 22. Then you shall say to Pharaoh, thus says he who is, Israel is my firstborn son. So in his proclamations to Pharaoh, Moses is supposed to present the nation of Israel as a masculine person. Remember, Jacob was the one whose name was turned to Israel. So it's a masculine name, a masculine representation. And so God is going to say, Israel is my firstborn son, my heir. Verse 23, and I say to you, you let my son go that he may serve me. And if you refuse to let him go, behold, I will kill or execute your firstborn son. So God, even before Moses made it to Egypt, was already talking about the first and the last plagues. And he had in mind all the ones in between as well. It's a great judgment call upon the nation of Israel, or nation of Egypt, and more specifically upon the gods of the Egyptians, the fake, fraudulent wannabes, the fallen angels, the demonic forces that pretended that they had control. Now, verse 24. At a lodging place on the way, so at some stopping point, maybe one of the pre-built camping sites, maybe even a place that had some rudimentary buildings in it. We are told that he who is met Moses and sought to put him to death. And this definitely confuses a lot of people. What is going on here? God told Moses to go to Egypt. Moses is going to Egypt. He's being obedient. Why is God trying to kill him? And the answer is that it is another one of God's lessons for Moses' family, that obedience is an imperative. You see, Moses knew that he should have circumcised both of his boys when they were born. But apparently, his most recent one hasn't been circumcised yet. And my guess is that Zipporah was appalled by cutting off the foreskin of the 8-day-old baby the first time she saw it, and absolutely refused to allow Moses to do it the second time. Now, that's speculation on my part and on the part of others. I believe that the Midianites, because they are descendants of Ishmael combined with Esau, they all practice circumcision. But over the centuries, it would appear that they had moved their circumcision to more of a adolescent coming-of-age ceremony for boys. And even though that might still be objectionable to some moms, the dads would be much more insistent. No, he's a man. He's becoming a man. You got to let him do man things. And the boys would choose it to do it as well. I think the typical age for for some of these were like in their about 13 or so. Moses probably circumcised his first boy on the eighth day of life. And when the second boy comes along, Zipporah says, "You are not cutting my boy." And so here he is, having given in to that, on the road to Egypt, where he's supposed to tell the Israeli people, "I am here as a messenger from God to get you out of bondage and take you to the promised land so that you can live in covenant relationship with God." And yet Moses is not keeping the sign of the covenant with his most recent son. And so God makes Zipporah come along to the covenant fulfillment, the covenant completion of circumcision. So that's why verse 25 says, "Then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin." So that's how we know it's all about circumcision. "And touched Moses' feet with it." I don't think it's touched as in she just reached out and touched. I think she threw it on his feet and said, "Surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me." So that is clearly anger. Anger at having had to do the circumcision ceremony. And so verse 26 says, "So he," meaning God, "let him," meaning Moses, "alone." So Moses is now back to full strength because she finally did what she was supposed to do with him for the baby. And it was then that she said, "a bridegroom of blood," because of the circumcision. And we know that she and the boys went home at this point. They didn't continue going to Egypt. And that part of the story will come up later.